Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
In this rule, it's like it depends what the definition of the word at is. Because if it's at an opponent, it can just be a dirty look. And as long as it's at an opponent, it's a violation of the taunting policy. Whereas whatever you call that amazing flying spinning kick that
it was Cassius so awesome.
The Lambo leap and Aaron Rodgers yelling to the crowd here in Chicago, none of those are at an opponent. So by the NFL's definition and explanation of that rule, those things don't count as taunting, even though they're much more flagrant actions physically than walking a few steps and staring at the sideline. I'm trying to figure out who this rule is for. I'm kind of stuck on that. I'm picturing like where would we be? We're somewhere in New England. We got to be in like Cape Cod or something. And we've just come in from our polo match or something, and we've played some bridge, and now we're going to turn on the football while we have some tea. And oh, this is a lovely game of football. And oh my goodness, oh, you've upset mother. Oh no, we can't have that. Look at the man clap at the other man. Oh no.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Face drop. Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. Joe Madden is going to be on the show at 1 o'clock. I'm very excited to talk with Joe. He is going to be out at the Crave the Auto Chicago Sports Spectacular, which is today and Sunday out at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. So we are going to talk with Joe about life, because we like talking with Joe about a lot of different things, but we're also going to talk with him about Shohei Ohtani. I'm looking forward to getting his reaction to Shohei winning the American League MVP and the year that he had. I mean, it's just really, really incredible. We're also going to talk with Mark Grody about the Bears. There's some DePaul stuff that I want to get into in the next segment. I know that a lot of people are probably wondering what my reaction is to the Rittenhouse not guilty on all charges verdict. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, and I'll just say that if my reaction isn't what you expect it to be, if there isn't a level of outrage that you think I'm not exploring, it's because I'm not surprised. And I think that it's a numbness that there are people who feel like when there are injustices done to people of color, but anyone, that we have found the American justice system overall to be inadequate in a lot of different forms. And so this to me is just another link in the chain of, and considering how that trial went and the way that the proceedings were held by the judge, it's expected. It's disappointing, but this is America. And I think that for some of us that are a little older, like me now, there's a numbness that's attached with stuff like this, where you go, of course, that's what was going to happen. Of course, that's what was in the cards. So I'm going to choose to continue on with doing the show today, and because this is what I expected. But yeah, I get anyone who is completely disappointed and befuddled by the judicial system in the United States of America, but and how there seems to be a difference between what is an adult and what isn't an adult around the country, and consequences for actions. It's upsetting, but not surprising. I'm going to get into what I saw last night. I want to further that conversation that I had with Dan and Layla about DePaul and how weird it was for me. I will do that next for you here on The Score.
How about the confidence to pull up before the defense could get set?
Oh, this is huge.
Junior.
Trigger the inbound. Rutgers doesn't have a timeout. DePaul chooses not to foul. Baker! Rebounded Johnson! And Johnson is fouled.
And by it.
Oh, he missed! Rutgers gonna have to fire! Ball game! DePaul!
How about that? DePaul wins last night. 73-70 was the final. The highlights are courtesy of Fox Sports. I was watching that game last night. It was a really weird circumstance. So I went to the dentist yesterday, and let me say that I achieved a level of award in adulting yesterday, and I was very excited about it. Since COVID hit, I think my last dentist appointment was in early March of 2020. And so I hadn't been back to the dentist because, terrified. And so I was like, you should probably go, see a dentist. And I was really happy with myself because this is the first time in a long time that I went to the dentist without there being wrong. Like I hadn't chipped a tooth or I was feeling something going on. Like I had an infection in my gums, like anything like that. I was just like, yeah, it's probably time. You haven't been to the dentist in 18 months, so go to the dentist. Shout out to Dr. Nye over at Dentology over on Wabash because they have everything there. They make you feel safe, like the whole nine yards. And I walked out of that after basically spending 2 years in this pandemic being like, I did a good job of taking care of my teeth. It was weird because you know how you go to the dentist and they always are telling you what you ain't doing right? You know how you walk away from your, like, man, I'm a horrible person that needs to floss more. Shout out to Home with Flossmore. And I didn't have that experience. The experience I had yesterday was they were like, okay, obviously you could do things better, but things look decent. There aren't any problems. You did a good job of taking care of your teeth. And I was like, yay! I've never had that experience as an adult. I've never had the experience of walking out of the dentist's office and feeling like, you deserve a gold star today, sir. So I got my gold star. So I'm sitting there. It ate into my day going to the dentist. And, there was some stuff that, cosmetically I want to get done, get a cleaning and all this stuff. I'm doing more TV. So it took a while. I finished the show. I head over there. I come back, I play a couple games of chess, I eat dinner, since I was in the neighborhood, shout out to Devil Dogs too, and I'm just sitting there watching Thursday Night Football, and it was terrible. It was terrible. Watching Mac Jones is fun. He's very, very efficient, and they've done a great job with giving him what he needs to be successful, and he's doing a great job of not overdoing it. Just like guys are open, I'm getting the ball, I'm anticipating throws, I'm throwing the spots. You know what the thought I had in my mind though while watching the Patriots take on the Falcons last night? The Bears would look like the Falcons if Andy Dalton was the quarterback. Like you would feel like there's no hope, that they would just look like that. Even with the Bears being 3-6, you've seen enough of Justin Fields to be like, okay, I would like to see more of it. So that leads me into watching DePaul last night. I'm like, all right, I'm completely bored with this game. I don't care about the college football game that was on. Oh, snap. We didn't do the segment with Joe Ostrowski yesterday. I haven't done a college football pick, but the last pick I made was that North Carolina Wake Forest pick. Your boy is 5-1 in college football. I think this is going to be a thing. Like, there's no more Big Doug, so maybe there could be Big L. Not the rapper, me, doing picks as a bit, like Doug used to do. So I'm watching DePaul, and I'm like, man, I am not connected to this team, like, as a fan. And I spent my whole life being a DePaul basketball fan. And, or a student, or someone who works at university, I still do, or a broadcaster. So each year I was kind of into whatever the next group of guys was. Like, I had Paul Reed in my class a couple years ago. Like, I spoke to his class. Like, I know some of the players that were here. I taught some of the players that were here. And this was the first time where I was just like, oh, I'm a disconnected alum at this point, because I'm not on campus. I'll be on campus in the spring, but I have no connection to this group. And it was weird watching it. It's an experience that, as a DePaul fan, I've never had. The great part about it is that while I wanted to be like, well, of course, DePaul has played well for the first half of this game, and then in the second half of this game, it's going to all fall apart. It didn't fall apart. It was fun and entertaining. There were students that were at the game. They were having a good time before they're dispersed to the world, because DePaul is on quarters, which means the kids go home at Thanksgiving. And I'm watching them come back and, like, hit threes, like meaningful threes, like in rhythm. There were no forced shots. I'm watching a bunch of transfers. And it made me think a lot about fandom and how fandom is cultivated and the connections that we have. Like, people laugh, oh, you know, you did your classes at Bama online. I did. I also went to Tuscaloosa 7 times in the 2 years that I was a student. And I do feel as connected with it as I do with DePaul, strangely enough. That has more to do with my academic pursuit than it does with the football team. But I have every DePaul credential, like, as a fan. I've got every bit of DePaulism in me. And I was just sitting there going, who are these people? Like, who are they? Now I need to start paying attention to how Tony Stubblefield coaches. He was on the show last week. We had a Or 2 weeks ago, we had a nice conversation with him about what he expected. And this is the transactional aspect of college athletics right now. And quite honestly, I'm happy that DePaul is taking advantage of it. It takes a while to build a recruiting base. It takes a while for basketball coaches to get students in that they are projecting to be primetime players when they're juniors. And there's a lot of losing that ends up going on. If the rules allow for you to take advantage, if there are students that have finished their commitments at other school and want to play 1 year at DePaul while trying to work on a master's degree, I love that, or finishing their education or using the extra eligibility that has come in because of COVID over the last couple of seasons, I am happy. Yeah, I said, halfway jokingly, a new day has dawned at DePaul, but I think there's some truth in it. And the truth is that the way that you have to compete in college basketball now, outside of the illegal stuff, like, I don't necessarily want my university out here scamming, but the way that you have to compete now is you've got to look for fits. And you've got to look for the person that might be able to help stabilize and get you on the right road right now. And it looks like that DePaul is taking advantage of that. And I felt disconnected, but it didn't feel icky to me. And now I'm going to make it, this is the whole idea of fandom in the first place. I'm going to make it my job to learn more about this team and Tony Stubblefield's style. And sure, it's a mid-level Big Ten team, But this Rutgers team went to the tournament last year, and they won a game in the tournament. I know what preseason DePaul basketball looks like. I remember, like Layla was saying in transition, I remember getting hyped when they beat Texas Tech, because I want to say DePaul was 10-2 or something like that after beating Texas Tech. So, like, you have a resume win, and then everything went to bleep. I imagine that that'll probably still be the case because it is so early in Stubblefield's tenure, and the Big East is tough as per usual. But that was a nice introduction last night. As a fan, that was a super nice introduction to a brand new team in Lincoln Park / the South Loop.
Another rebound, Johnson. Here comes the ball. Jones! David Jones! Three ball, his first points of the second half.
David Jones scored 22 points in the second half and went 4-for-6 from behind the arc. Javon Liberty Freeman. Freeman Liberty. I'm going to keep doing that. Liberty Bibbity. Freeman Liberty, 19 points and 9 rebounds. DePaul beats Rutgers 73-70.
It's awesome to have his parents meet with those two names. It's awesome.
It really is. It's fantastic because if you think about it, those two names are perfect together.
Exactly.
They're perfect.
And I always think of just of how those names were created. So it's always good.
Correct. It's really good. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Mark Grody is going to join me. The Bears injury report is a story in itself. Danny Trevathan has now been put on IR. That's probably the end of him as a Bear. I'll discuss that. And Justin Fields, how does he improve on what he did against Pittsburgh? We'll talk with Grotes about that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Sideline reporter for WBBM News Radio 780.
Of course, if you're not down with that, we got two words for you!
Bears hit.
We need Mark Grody.
With Mark Grody.
Excuse me. Couldn't get to the cough button there in time.
Didn't notice.
Illinois State's finest alum, Mark Grody, joins Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Yeah, he is. Mark Grody joins me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino out in Las Vegas has the biggest and best sports book. If you're going to Vegas, you should go there. Do your sports betting and hang out at the pool. It's a good time. Hi, Groats.
Lawrence, let me start you off with a really big hit right here. The last time the Bears won a game following a bye week was 2013. Mark Trestman would be the head coach, and Shay McClellan, Bears fans.
Chicken Dinner Road. He was from Chicken Dinner Road.
Which, honestly, Lawrence, is still the best story about Shay McClellan. Like, the stories about McClellan before he set foot on the field were better than any recap or film review of his play, except for a couple of preseason moments. But Bears fans probably remember this game because Shay McClellan broke Aaron Rodgers' collarbone on the first drive at Lambeau Field. So that's what the Bears are dealing with. They have not dealt with their time off particularly well in the last 8 years.
You're right about that. It has been a struggle for them, whether it's bye weeks or long weeks. It has been a struggle for your Chicago Bears. And they're on a losing streak right now, which they would tell you makes them better. I was watching while on vacation. I was watching the Thursday night game last week. And to everyone's surprise, Miami was able to contain Lamar Jackson. They did it in a very interesting way where they were like, let's show him some zero coverages and let's go after him. Can the Bears do that?
I don't think so. I don't like the I loved what Miami did, and getting a little bit more specific on it, they had a combined between their two safeties, Javon Holland and Brandon Jones, combined for 38 blitzes in that game, more than any DBs in the game this year and for a long time, as a matter of fact. What I worry about, and what you always have to worry about in zero coverage, is if you're bringing everybody, you better have guys that can cover and, you know, get the guys that are still going to be out there one-on-one, and I'm not completely confident for a couple of reasons. One would be Kendall Vildor. I know that Jalen Johnson is very good. I don't know if you want to put Kendall Vildor on that particular island right now. Also, and I know you mentioned it before this Bears hit, you don't know if Eddie Jackson is going to play, and we're going to find out very shortly. We'll get the status report, and I will post it for you on Twitter at Mark Grody Sports. But, you know, Eddie Jackson has been limited because of the hamstring, and say what you want about him, he is still the best safety on the Bears. So I don't know that you have all the weapons. And then the obvious thing is John Harbaugh is a very good coach. He saw it, and I would think that if a team, an opposition to Baltimore, was going to try that trick again, it shouldn't be right after the game that they're coming off of. Maybe down the road, that is a slight template or blueprint that you can use. And I'm not saying don't try it, but you can't go the full blitz game plan against Baltimore because they'll be ready for it. And I'm just the way the Bears defense has been playing, I am not confident that they will put that same kind of pressure on or even get home. You know, Lamar Jackson, in all of that, it should be pointed out, was sacked four times. And let's face it, the Bears defense has struggled recently.
I also don't think the Bears are as good in the back four as Miami is. And I know that Miami has a terrible record, but the guys that they have in the back four were healthy and they're better. They have corners that can play man. And the Bears don't have corners. They don't have enough corners that I would trust in. They got one that I trust, but they don't have enough that I would trust to do that a lot. I liked what Sean Desai said. You have to kind of do a little column A, column B. It you should mix in some of those looks because they were successful. But you should also take a look at what other game plans worked against Lamar Jackson and figure out it's about timing. I don't think that the Bears can run this as a particular strategy. But in a couple of different situations, yeah, they can take a look and see if they've got Baltimore off balance enough to try it. I'm concerned that the Bears aren't going to be able to stop Baltimore's run attack, no matter who the running back is behind Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I think this year, the Bears, Lawrence, I think they have allowed 100 yards or more five times this year, and there's been some huge games for opposing teams' running backs as well. And I thought it was interesting, too, and I thought wrong of Matt Nagy to keep referring to that as an outlier, as if it's just something that's kind of sporadically been happening. No, the Bears have lost those games where they have had, you know, teams opposing running backs rush for 100 yards. And this has been going on since 2019. And I know that I am so guilty of, like, I got to get over what they did in 2018 and being a lead, especially against the run. But it's still jarring to me every time there is one of those explosive runs where you see guys going right up the gut. And supposedly the part of the team this year, with all the depth that has existed on the Bears defensive line, we haven't really seen it. We started to see it get better with Eddie Goldman last week. You know that when Akeem Hicks is healthy, he's a stalwart in there. But you're going to have some guy, you know, Bilal Nichols has not put together the season that I thought he would this year. We saw Angelo Blackson struggle a little bit, one of the guys that the Bears brought in this year as well. And then there's just the matter of Khalil Mack and whether or not he is going to play. We still don't know about that. Obviously, Robert Quinn should be good to go for this week. But there are problems on the defense that I didn't necessarily suspect would exist. And I hate that we are talking about this, Lawrence. And it is definitely worthy that running backs, you know, for Baltimore and other teams, you have to get back to zeroing in on them. Whereas before, it almost felt like you don't have to worry about that. But you do in a big way.
Groats, how does Justin Fields carry over the success he had against Pittsburgh? What's the plan here?
Well, I think that I would like to see the Bears be bold in the first quarter right from the outset. The Baltimore defense is not as good as the Pittsburgh defense. And I think that this is one of those games where, yes, of course, you want to continue the momentum that you have started to have this year with the running game and David Montgomery returning for a second game and what Khalil Herbert has been able to do, Damian Anderson healthy as well. But I think this is a you're back home. You're again, you've had the time to refresh a little bit. And what Justin Fields did in that final drive in the final few minutes of the game in Pittsburgh, let's let him carry that over, because the one thing that Justin Fields hasn't done this year, even though he's had elite moments and elite quarters and elite drives, I don't know, maybe elite's not the right word, we'll say good, the elite throw to Jimmy Graham, that was for sure. He hasn't put four quarters together yet, like where you're like, okay, this is consistent and this is good. And I'm not saying that as a rookie quarterback he should have, but maybe this is the time to do it. And this is the time to try some things, because you're in that weird place right now in your season where, yes, the Bears still are very much alive mathematically for the season. They overcame the losing streak last year. It is so much about getting Justin Fields to continue to develop, and not just in moments, but for an entire game. So I'd like to see some gutsy play calling by Bill Lazor early in this game.
Groats, I appreciate you jumping on. We're going to talk to Joe Maddon in a couple of minutes. You did a tremendous job holding down the show when you were hosting for me. I appreciate it. I also appreciate the bass drop attempt by you.
I got killed because of that. All right. I was getting crushed.
It's all right, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate that you and Zach and Ronji all took it on and said, you know what? This is a part of the show. We're going to try to make the people have some joy as the show starts. You'll get it. The more reps, the better. You're like Justin Fields. You just need some more reps. And once you get those reps, you'll be good to go.
I'm going to put four quarters together next time I fill in for you, Lawrence. Thank you, my friend.
You're a good man and thorough. That right there is Mark Grody. Follow him at Mark Grody Sports Bars. We are going to take a timeout, but when we come back, an old friend gets to visit the show. I'm really excited. Joe Maddon, like, I knew that he was going to be in town, so we reached out, and he was like, yeah, I'll call into the show. So Joe Maddon is going to call in. What a time to have the guy that manages the American League MVP. I'll talk to him about Shohei Ohtani and a lot of other stuff next here on The Score.